Last week, we released the first part of a two-part episode.
Never see Abdullah again because he was given to us as a gift. I was beaten, but it still didn't stop until no tears in my eyes. I become a slave.
If you haven't heard the first part of our discussion, you can find it on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. Hope you enjoy. We have a long fight ahead of us.
Here I am.
Here I am.
Here I am.
And here I am.
Here I am.
And here I am.
And here I am. We shall never die.
So one of the things that you've done and you've been doing is what you call the Freedom Walks, the Sudan Freedom Walk, which is a great example of someone saying, this will not change if we don't do something about it. So tell me about the first Freedom Walk.
And before I go to a Freedom Walk, I was involved to go into Southern Sudan in the refugees camps, using others' country avenue to get into Sudan, because when I left Sudan, I left Khartoum, I left with one-way ticket, a ticket of no return, that's how I put it. Because I cannot go back where I have seen evil things done to my peoples in my presence, and I cannot do anything about it. I try to change things in Sudan, in Khartoum, when I was a Sudanese swimming champion, and I was being told that you cannot. If you keep doing this, then this is what you're going to get. And that's why I bought a ticket of no return. So when I used to go to refugees camps to liberate, and we're using others, NGOs, people who feel that we have to fight this together. And we went and always bring people out. That was itself was not enough to me. When I come here, still, people don't hear it as it is. There was another war broke out in Sudan, in the Western Sudan, in Darfur, where the genocide being declared, but nobody saying anything about it. Nobody doing anything about it. So I thought to myself, I will do something in small scales, but nobody will see it and nobody will hear it. Now, I have to go on the road and cry every day. If you don't hear me tomorrow, today you will hear me tomorrow. If you don't hear me today, tomorrow you will hear me next day. If you hear me this week, you will hear me another week and another week. And I came that I have to walk without missing a centimeter of the walks, all the way to take my cry, walk away, turn my back to the United Do Nothing Nations in New York. The rally, the first rally was in front of that body, which body that was being created on a novel vision by those who created the UN after World War II, if I'm not mistaken, was being created so that to address the victimization which is being inflicted on the others, to be being created to champion the human right for all human beings. But that body, in my opinion, because I've seen it in Khartoum, yes, you have UN officers, UN these, but they cannot do anything when my people are being starved in the south. They cannot do anything if the government of Sudan cannot give them a green light. They don't have a voice. Then why are you there? We have people who, 1,000 was starving, and the UN have food in Khartoum, in their warehouse, but they cannot deliver because the government of Khartoum have to give them a go-ahead. When Southern Sudanese was being forced to go to Addis Ababa, to go to Ethiopia as refugees, which is the media called them later on children of war, children of darkness, lost boys and lost girls. Nobody's a lost person. Why? It was UN never even speak up on that. That's why I call it the United Do Nothing Nation. That's why I walk away. Since I'm an American citizen, let me text my cry to the people whom I consider as my leaders and walk from New York all the way to the capitals in Washington, D.C.
So you walked from New York City to Washington, D.C.
to advocate end this, stop the slavery and end the genocide in Darfur. And this genocide I'm talking about, I'm comparing for people that happen to be Muslims. No any Christian in Darfur. They are, yes, African. They're all Muslim. But they're being slaughtered by somebody who call himself an Arab in the capitals. Even that these people, they believe in Islam more than anybody in Sudan that I know. They was being slaughtered because they still behave with African culture. They have kept their languages. They believe in their culture as an African, even though they are Muslims. They pay a price for that. And I was campaigning for that to be stopped. They are not my cousin. They are not my nephew. But they are my fellow human being. Somebody have to speak up for them. And I did.
And a few years after that, you walked from Brussels in Belgium to The Hague. And then last year, you walked from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. And I want to get to that. For people that are listening and don't see, you have a dog tag that says, bring them home now.
Yes.
You have a Star of David. You're not Jewish. Why are you, how did you get involved with advocating for Israel, for the hostages?
I go to what you said about the walk from Brussels to Hague. When Omar al-Bashir, when the genocide was declared, and at that time the ICC was just created new, and I found that they're supposed to be the one after they apprehends Milosevic. And I asked myself, yes, Milosevic have done bad. But if you compare the atrocity was being committed in Sudan, in Darfur, leave our in Darfur, in southern Sudan, will not even come close to what Milosevic did. Why are we having a double standard? And that's why I decided I have to go and address these things with that court. I walked from Belgium to Netherlands. Within the ICC, I was being told that the ICC will not take the case of the Southern Sudanese because all these atrocities happen in the South. It happened before the ICC was being created. The only case that they will pick is the case of Sudan, which is Darfur. And indeed, they went and then do their own investigations to get all the facts. And they came up with all the facts. And the president of Bashir was indicted. The first sitting president ever to be indicted on the fact that he committed the genocide in Darfur. Even that he was arrested, he was not arrested, I did my part. When October 7 happened, and evil Hamas was, in my opinion, stupid, you cannot commit the worst gross atrocity, and you tape them and showed them to the world. I don't know what was wrong with them, but an evil person is not a person. An evil person, because he's drowned in his evilness. And that's why they did. You cannot beheaded a person who happen to be like you, and you can Allah Akbar, God is great. You cannot shoot a child, beheaded a child, and you said God is great. There is no God there. There is no God there. Except an evil God, in my opinion. The reason I said that, because thing like that happened to me when I was a child. Thing like that, I saw it with my own eyes in my village. And that's why I said, this thing is not new to me. I know it for facts. It may be new to those happened in Kibbutz at that time. It may be news to anybody who never seen that part of evils within the evil human being. And I said, they came for me first, and now they're coming for you. Knowing what I know, then how can I stay away even that I'm not a Jew? Because I knew it. I know it. Who will say it better than I do? It is me. But of course, there are so many millions of Southern Sudanese who went through what I, because some of them have no chance, and some of them will be, it is not me. But yesterday was you. Today is what that one. And tomorrow going to be, who is going to be there when you, the last person will be the one to be targeted. So I decided to go to Israel, not to change things, but to be with the family. Even that I went there without even knowing that who are those family. But I know they are there. They're crying. They are down.
The hostage families.
Hostage family. They are down. Even the nation itself. I just want to go and tell them, I've been in the same situation where you are. And feel your pains. I know what you went through, because I went through it. But I'm here at least to put my arm to consult you and say to you, you are not alone. You're down, but I want to hold your hands, because your pain is my pain. I was there before you, and now you're there. Knowing what I know, and now you're going through, let's hold hands together. Maybe that will give us some kind of, I don't know what the word in English, some kind of consoling, to console ourselves. Even that I don't look like you, but in the eyes of the God, in eyes of Almighty God, we are all His children. The persons who did this to you is not a human being, he's an evil. And indeed, in Hasid Square, which is used to be Tel Aviv Museum of Art, I met three families. We cried together. And to them, when we departed, they said thank you. That itself showing us that we have compassion of human being. You can be this and you can be, but we are all human beings. And this unity, we have to bring it to the reality to fight the evils. And I know for sure that there are others, even on the side where the evil come from, there are good people there. There are good people there. This world will be a better place for all of us if all of us look into our own eyes and see ourselves, regardless of our color, regardless of our height, as the children of one God, not two God. God doesn't like ugly. God doesn't like evils. And what happened in October 7, it is a work and acts of evils. And to me, coming from a society that being targeted, being singled out, I always, and my peoples in generals, they went through what the Jewish community went. We have the same things. And by the way, there was one time I was in a refugees camps, and a Southern Sudanese young girls, after we brought them out from their slavery, she came to me and tell me her dream. And her dream is to go to schools, become a doctor, and visit Israel.
This is a girl that you saved from slavery.
Yes.
And her dream is to become a doctor and go to Israel.
Visit Israel. That hit me. And that happened at that time before I even went to Israel. I have to walk away and come back because I have to digest and go through the thought, seeing where the location, where she is, in a place of nowhere. No schools, no hospitals, no future. And now she wants to become a doctor. So I came back and I asked, but after you become a doctor, why you want to go? And he said, in African language, but these are our peoples. We're talking about a child, never went to school. Even she doesn't know where Israel is. And dreaming big. That itself bring me that we all human being. So when I came back, I have to work on up to fulfill the dream of that little girl.
Why did she want to go to Israel? She didn't even know where Israel is.
Because during our victimization in Sudan, Southern Sudan is always being singled out as supported by Israel's. Southern Sudan is being seen by the Arab world, and I don't know where they get that from, accused as a Jewish sympathizer. And for the Jewish community who doesn't understand this, and probably understand the Sudan itself, Sudan is the most anti-Israel, even worse than Iran. I don't know about now, because I personally have been challenging them, and things got to change. I make a promise when I was in Israel for the first time that Sudan will normalize relationship with Israel in my lifetime. And I'm smelling it and I'm seeing it.
Amen.
Sudan was the place where the Arab world convinced and put together a pledge, which is a resolution against Israel. The pledge of the three no's. Most people don't understand or don't know what is the three no's. No to Israel, no negotiation with Israel, and no recognizing Israel. Was done in Khartoum, in Sudan, by the Arab world. Why is Sudan? And Sudan is an African country, it's not an Arab country. So that's to confirm what I just said. And during that time, we was at war with the Northern Sudanese. And one of the leader of the movement decided, since we are being victimized, being leveled, is let's go to these people and then talk to them. And they talked. And the first country that came to sympathize with the Southern Sudanese whom are being targeted and being killed, not by only the government of Khartoum, the entire Arab world was part of assisting the government of Sudan of killing Southern Sudanese Christians. The first country that came to rescue and give Southern Sudanese tool to defend themselves was the State of Israel. So that didn't come as a surprise to me, for the little girl to say, these are our people.
When you have conversations with the families of hostages, and you tell them about your experiences as a child slave and then fighting against slavery, what is their reaction?
As human beings, and the first family that I met, they were sitting together, holding hands, a mom and a dad. And first I have to introduce myself to them. And why I'm there, where am I coming from, and where I came from originally. So that to give them a sense that I am there for them, with introduction that I have given. So they decided to put me in the middle. We sit down, and my arms on their shoulders and so on. After we hold our arms, and we cry. Of course, since they didn't talk back much, because I'm the one who is there for them, I just advise them that let's rely on two things: and faith. Hope, assuming that your loved one will come back. Faith, put it in the hand of God, because that's only you have. You have nothing now. That's why you're here. And I told them that you are not alone. There are people there for you. And that's why I'm here for you. And all what we have during our times is just tears. Other family which I am here in the States, a family of Tal. We were in Chicago. We met and we did the same things. Same thing I told people in Jerusalem, a friend who came after I finished the walk and invited my fellow Southern Sudanese walkers into a place. We were about 38, six Southern Sudanese who walked with me, and then the rest who came there to listen. Of course, nobody believed what happened. Nobody within the Jewish community who tried to put the Holocaust behind them never thought something similar to the Holocaust will happen to them. Which I said, being asked by one of the TV show in Jerusalem that what happened. Israel knows, but, you know, protected itself. And so I said, they fall asleep. They fall asleep. That's all. There's nothing more. And we hope they're going to learn from this one. So those families, they're down. And this is what I promised. I said in the park last time that, yes, we have few who came out, but we cannot celebrate. We will celebrate when everybody is out. Because if we celebrate with the few, what are we telling the other family who is still crying? So to me, let's be happy. And then let's keep working to bring everybody out. And after that, we have to ask ourselves, where is the pledge of never again? Is it the last? If it is the last, we thought that Holocaust was the last. Not only Holocaust was the last, we thought that coming from the slavery in the hand of Pharaoh was the last. And Holocaust took place. Even that, the drum of the Holocaust were there before us in the entire Europe. Everybody was aware there is something coming, but nobody thought that it will materialize. So to my fellow Jewish community and Jews at large, as I said before and I will say it again, the victimizations of one ethnic group, in my opinion, should not be allowed to go on and on and on. Incumbent on those happen to be not Jewish, Muslims, Christians, Buddhists, all human beings. Let's come out together and say, enough is enough. I may not be old enough to know historically, but this is what I know. Jewish community has contributed to the human civilization on this earth. Why they are being demonized and being victimized? Not only one place, all over the world, including here in the United States. I spoke against this in Canada, I spoke against it in Australia, I spoke against it in South Africa. The only place where I didn't get a chance to speak again is Sudan. But I talk about it when I got out to challenge the government of Sudan. How come you being the only country have something written in your document, in your passport, that the Sudanese who hold the Sudanese passport cannot go to Israel? And they don't use the word Israel in their writing. They call it the country of enemy, Belad al-Adu. Which war did you fought with Israel? Which border did you share with Israel? That, in my opinion, and I said it in Tel Aviv and I said it in Jerusalem, in one of the TV, I said, that itself is just victimizing the Sudanese and putting them in a position that to assume that they are enemy to a person who never, they don't share even
anything
together.
Yeah.
So, what happened to the Jewish? The world have to come out with all voice. And I am urging and I am appealing to everyone. And I said it before, if you are a Jewish person and related to Judaism, Don't be ashamed to yourself. Be proud of who you are. If Moses walked away because of his identity, then be proud of that. We used to have Jewish in Sudan, in Egypt, in Morocco, in Algeria, in Libya, in Tunisia. And I'm giving example of country that happened to be African country. For God's sakes, we used to have Jewish contributed to what those countries have at that time. Go back today and ask yourself, what happened to them? Why did it disappear? Did anybody say anything? Did they just pack up one day in Sudan, in Tunisia, in Algeria, in Morocco, in Libya, and just walk because they don't want? Because if they was born there, what made them just to leave? They left because they was being singled out, hate. And let us stop that. And I hope people with good conscience will agree with me and let come out with a voice which everybody in the world could hear.
And you've been making that voice very, very loud in New York City, in Times Square, in Washington Square Park. What has it been like, the experience of coming and saying, I'm not Jewish, I experienced slavery, here I am to speak about the hostages? What are the reactions that you get from New Yorkers?
You know, I have seen some things, and I interacted with people whom I never interacted, simply because on my stand. And I give you an example. I was getting out from Recreation Center in New York, where I work. And then there was a young boy who will go there. Nobody knows he's a Jew. He doesn't understand, because there is fear too. And I understand that. I have seen it for 30 years when at Columbia University, when Jewish kid was singling out, some of them, they don't want to identify themselves as Jewish. And I said to them before at that time, but some of them will never even recall. So I was wearing this Star of David. And one of the kids who saw this, he was shocked. And he said, are you a Jewish? I said, yeah. And his eye popped out. And I can tell that he's shocked. So I hold his hand. I said, no, I'm not a Jewish, but I'm a friend. The kids were jumping up with joy to have somebody who doesn't look like him to embrace and be proud and supporting the Jewish. To me, that time, I brought out something in that boy that he didn't know, his identity. I brought something out, and he was like telling me that, what can we do? I said, be proud of who you are. So when I walk, and with that I have this in my next every day, even that I'm working, because I look, there is nothing will say that you should not be wearing this, you should not wear that. Even that some of my co-workers will, you know, make fun of me, say I'm a Jewish person. I'm proud. People will, on the street, will come and say, thank you. Thank you. People I don't know, thank you. Then, now, we're coming together. Somebody who I don't know before, now saying thank you. This is the beginning of conversations. When I'm in Times Square with hauling even I by myself, and people will come, say thank you. Not only that, when you're walking from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, thousands of cars will stop to come and say to us, thank you. Because I made it clear to the workers that we're going to have sign. And I was having the two babies whom I was having fear. And I'm not going to talk about my fear then.
Kfir in Ariel Bibas. Yeah.
Because that fear come as true. But I talk about it. So I told them that each worker have to have the Israeli flag on him or on her. Nobody said no. They did, because they follow me now. So come down to what I'm getting. If we keep saying what we're saying today, if we really mean it, we're going to change the world for the better world. If we keep talking about not running away, because we don't want another October 7 again. We don't want another death, whether with on somebody which we disagree, because there are innocent peoples. There are innocent peoples who perish, and I wish people on the other side, especially on Hamas side, especially on the Palestinian side, there is a place on earth for all of us. If you don't like it, but do it for your child. Because tomorrow you will not be there. That child will be there. You cannot build the world with hate. You cannot have a society to hate somebody that they don't know. That is wrong, especially a child. You can take a Chinese child today and put it in Africa. In 10 years, that child is an African. Take an African child, put it in Russia. It's the same things. And I said it long ago, the world of today, it is not the world of 200 years ago. I never thought a person who was given as a gift to be in Oval Office with the President of the United States. I never thought one day I will be sitting with you here as a free man. And I never thought I will be free. And this is why I'm using every minute of my freedom to be the voice or to be the champions of those who have no voice. October 7th, which is we don't want to walk away from it, should be the last things happen in the Middle East. And I wish everybody in the Middle East embrace that and understand that and work on that.
Amen. Amen.
Middle East is a beautiful place. There is some things that we can gain from one another, but we cannot do it if we hate one another. The policy of evil Iran, the whole world should unite, and especially the Arab world, and especially the Islamic world. Because of the evilness of Iran, victimize a child in Syria, victimize a child in Israel, victimize a child in Lebanon, victimize a child in Gaza, victimize a child somewhere else. And not even that. What people don't understand today, Iran is investing on more than 11 terrorist groups in the continent of Africa today. We have people who were just being headed 2 weeks ago by radical groups in Democratic Republic of Congo. In Mauritania, in Nigeria, is going on every day. And who is behind it is Iran. For what? For what? Even though now maybe their belief in their ideology becoming as to them as a winner, because you can see Europe, what is going on in Europe, which I'm not talking about it, but is it for good or for bad? So let us speak up and let be the voice, united voice, a common voice, to reject it, hate and embrace it, peace for all human beings.
Do you hate Abdullah, the man who stole you into slavery?
Hate is not going to bring back what I went through. But if I would have get a chance to sit and talk to him, he will cry. Because what he did, it was not good, and he knows it was not good. What he did is not an action of a human being, it is was an action of the evils. And by the way, after I become a Sudanese swimming champion, I went back from Khartoum to Kosti to go and look for the family that enslaved me years and years after that. And I was shocked to see the reaction when they received me. I was received as a human being. For the first time, we have to share the meal together. And my head was going up and down. Is it real? But I went there just to see their actions. Their action then was different from their action before. Before they was look at me as a slave, as a gift. Now, even I was asking myself internally, is it because I'm a Sudanese swimming champion? I'm a different person? Even the lady was crying, saying that when you disappear, we were looking for you all over. We were worried what happened to you, but that's not what I went there for. I went there to see their actions. And that's why I'm hoping one day I will get a chance, if peace comes to Sudan, I will go back to the place where I was to trace, and I hope somebody will be there walking with me. And I hope that family, somebody will be there within the extended family who's still alive, so that will be asked by a different person, how do you know Simon? What is the relationship? And I just want to hear what their explanation to that will come.
I hope you get a chance to do that. I finish every episode with a list of questions. There's no right or wrong answer, just whatever the first thing that comes to your mind. Simon Deng, what is one thing people don't know about you?
That I'm a human being, like any human being. I may not look like you, but if you get a chance to give me a chance, you will be surprised that there is no difference between us.
What is one thing people don't know about the Shilluk people?
Shilluk is the most diverse, loving society, freedom, democracy, even that it is not written. She looks at the only society in Sudan at all, and now in southern Sudan, who believe in the system of governing, because they are ruled by the king up to now. All the other king perished. The only Chulu kingdom still exists. We have a rule of respect. Respect to all human beings and respect to elders and respect to the youngest. Chuluks is a community that if you did wrong, they will spell it out. It will be like a curse, not only to your family, but a curse to your community. If somebody is stolen something in Chuluks, that even that person would be axed within the community because he brought a shame to the community and ashamed. The kingdoms of Chuluks is a place for all human beings. The rules of the kingdoms that every human being are children of the kings. A person can commit a crime, huge crime, and he runs to the kingdoms. That person is safe. Even that has done gross crimes, that's safe because the king will solve that problem no matter how bad it was, peacefully. And the society will come out what kind of punishment, because the reason that person run, it was because of guilt that he or she have. So I wish the Chuluks history should be written, but unfortunately at that time how to put things in a paper was being denied to them by those who knew how to put things together. But historically perspective, even that is not written, we have them. And that's why the kingdom of the Chuluk still exists up to today.
And I think the fact that you are speaking all over the world and presenting not just yourself, but also your people is great. And people, I assume a lot of people that are listening in are now going to go on Google and look for the Chuluk and learn. So that's a great
thing. And not even that, during Sudan, before the Southern Sudan became independent, whoever that come as a head of the states in Sudan, the first visit that he will do, he will go to the Chulu kingdom because he or she is a son of the Chulu kingdoms and will sit down with the kings. Even he's the head of the states, the king will be in high chair and the president of Sudan will be the lower chair. That was the tradition in Sudan then.
When was the last time you cried?
Last week. When I hugged the, is it grandfather or of the two babies in the center park?
The uncle of
the uncle, yeah, yes.
Of Firin Ariel Bibas.
When I went to hug him, and the reason because I was holding the pictures of those kids when I was walking to Jerusalem. And even though I didn't give up, I was still holding hope, but I have a fear, because the environment that they are being kept in, it is not an environment for the child. And I was when he was speaking about the kids, and I heard it from the voice of the Prime Minister when he feeling pain, talking about those kids, how they die. And I began to come to conclusions. Those kids was what they did, because I think when you have a child, that child will be crying. And will not stop because he doesn't know he's a child. Maybe need something, so he's crying. And the way they did, or those evils they did to the kids, they were doing it just to stop those kids of crying what they're crying for. That's what's very painful.
Simon, what gives you hope?
I think what I went through. Because I walk away with a new identity. I'm not a slave to what I was. Even that, the word itself, if I see the word slavery, is always bring something, fear, bring back the trauma that I have, I'm trying to put away. You know, I decided that I would never even speak on what happened to me until I was here in the States speaking about the slavery, but not me. I don't want to bring the trauma back, the tears and so on. Until it was in New York, in one of the newspapers, the front page with the articles that you can buy a human being in Sudan for $10. In New York City, here in the United States. It took me 3 nights. I cannot sleep. These people being bought for $10, these are people that I know. I know where are they, I know who is doing it, and so on. But how can I know? So now I have to bring back and walk and use what happened to me and turn it into a positive things, so that I will not keep crying even internally. Because when I talk about what happened to me, when I talk about, I'm happy because I'm releasing it from my chest. Because if I hold it, it itself is sinking me down. But if I throw it out, I remember when I was speaking before the Human Rights Commission in Geneva, now telling my story to the world for the first time, I broke down. Somebody had to finish it.
I remember there's a video I see.
So all these things, there is a better world for all of us if we cannot inflict a harm, a wrongdoing to an innocent person. We can be happy. And I wish that for those who victimize others, they should. I don't want them to have another person to cry like me. But I'm very optimistic. Tomorrow can be better than today. I'm very optimistic. The world of ours, it will be a glorious, a blessing world later on if we talk to one another. I never knew you before, but now we have become family. We become family.
Simon, I just want to thank you for taking the time, and we're going to make this a two-part episode because I want every person to hear everything that you have to say. I also want you to know that if you ever need me personally for anything, I will be there. I will walk with you if it's 1 mile, if it's 300 miles. And I truly believe that we can make a difference if we work together. So I'm just so immensely grateful to say, here I am with Simon Deng. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And my last message, if I might to say it to whoever that will listen, don't feel sorry for me. Feel sorry for the actions that you do by doing nothings. Feel sorry for yourself when you see a bully and you walk away without telling the bully no. Feel sorry when you're assuming the wrong thing will correct themselves without you putting your hands on it and your voice on it. Be the voice of those who have no voice and speak up on behalf of those who cannot speak for themselves. And then do a little things. If somebody down, hold his hand and lift it up. And that's my message to those who will listen to it. You have a moral obligation to say wrong is wrong and right is right.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Michael Greenspan, Shai's father-in-law. I'd like to thank you for listening to the Here I Am podcast with Shai Davidai. Here I Am is recorded at the Cave Production House in Hackensack, New Jersey, and is brought to you in partnership with Abby Sophia and Adamit Productions. You can find us on Instagram, YouTube, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts. I'd also like to extend my deepest gratitude to everyone at Adamit Productions for turning Shai's dream into a reality, and to all our donors and partners for their unwavering commitment to fighting for Jewish civil rights. Most importantly, I'd like to thank you, our listeners. Let's be honest, none of this would have been possible without your support and dedication. Showing up is half the battle. Thank you for showing up. Thank you for being there. Thank you for saying, "Here I am."